Hi guys, I just wanted to give a quick heads up before the show starts. This week while recording the episode with Brian, I did the most basic of schoolboy errors. I didn't switch my microphone on. So instead of me speaking into my Samsung that I'm doing now, I actually was speaking directly to my MacBook speakers, which makes for a little bit of a difference in the sound quality. So heads up, my voice is a little bit different this week. My apologies. I'll promise not to do that again. And all that being said, on with the show.
I'm Danny Brown, and you're listening to Life Through a Dram.
Welcome to Life Through a Dram, where Danny Brown shares his take on life, being a better person, and appreciating the here and now, all accompanied by a dram and a fine single malt whiskey. And now, here's your host, Danny Brown.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Life Through a Dram. This week, I'm kind of excited about my guest. I get excited about all my guests. Don't get me wrong. And if you're a previous guest, please don't chase me down an email because I didn't get excited about you. But this week, I'm speaking with Brian Drakes. And Brian and I have gone back. We go back a while about various things, and we'll talk about that in the show. But he's also very much like me when it comes to, you know, the mindset about how to live, etc. And that's the kind of reason why I'm excited to, you know, have a chat with Brian today. So, Brian, welcome to the show. How about telling us all about yourself?
Well, Danny, I am so excited to be here. We go back, like you said, a ways. And I'll go on the record as saying, like, you were one of the people who, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, I kind of considered a mentor when I was just a novel car guy that was casually interested in marketing and started following around on blog posts. So it feels really cool to be having a real-time conversation with somebody who is a mentor in my life. I guess you could say I am a gearhead. I'm a car guy. I am someone who prefers to chase work-life parallel over work-life balance and have spent the last decade doing so. And my current, I guess you could say, passion project, side hustle outside of my day job as a customer success manager for ClearVoice is I run a, well, we're not 100% sure what we're calling it yet, but it's called the Gearhead Project. And effectively, we're kind of distilled our pitch down into a community where gearheads are helping each other build better lives. So we're kind of trying to help people find the, instead of work and life being balanced and in opposition to each other, we're trying to show people the stuff that you like to do for fun outside of work means more than just distraction and entertainment. You pick up skills and actions and ideas in there that help you, you know, you can pull that back into the rest of your life and make a more virtuous cycle or circle where life gets more aligned to what you just genuinely enjoy doing.
And that sounds really cool, and we're definitely going to speak about that later for sure. Two things, yes. Though. One, mentor, A, thank you, but B, that makes me sound really old, so damn you, Driggs, damn you. but B, I know it's early in the morning for you. It's like about, I don't know, 9 o'clock where you are?
It is 9 o'clock in the morning on a Friday.
Alrighty, so probably a little bit early for a dram. I mean, I'm drinking, it's noon here, so hey, I'm going to drink a whiskey, you know, that's a Scottish thing. So I'm having the Glenmorangie 18-year-old, which I had a few weeks back. It's a really nice, one of my favorites. And I thought, getting Brian on the show, I'm going to have one of my favorite whiskeys. What are you having today?
Well, like you said, considering it is 9 a.m. here in Phoenix, and it's Friday, and I'm going to drive into the office after this, I am having a Pacifico Mexican beer.
Oh, I just heard that crack open. That sounds good. I love Mexican beers. I love the, to me, Mexican beers, if it's not a craft beer, Mexican beers are the closest thing that you could ever get to a craft beer. And they're like clean and everything. So that sounds a very good beer to have.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of being lazy on a beach somewhere. So, you know, They say you dress for the job you want, maybe drink for the job you want too.
That sounds good. Well, Schlangevar, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
So I mentioned, and you sort of alluded to it as well in your intro, I mentioned we've known each other for a while. And I think the first thing that brought us together was clout. and our mutual loathing of that damn platform.
Yes.
I've blogged about this many times, why I hate clout. But what was it about clout that got you so, I don't know, just, you know, fired up?
Well, you know, twofold. I think primarily it was just the fact that they took that position where, well, if you're sharing stuff on Twitter and it's a public Twitter account, then you don't really have any say in what gets done with that data. And while I agree that that's true, to me, it really bugged me that they pulled in my picture, they pulled in my biography, and they pulled in some tweets, and they actually presented, you know, you couldn't tell the difference between somebody who actually was a customer or a subscriber to Clout and somebody who was just, you know, completely random and might not even know they existed. And I've also had a longstanding sort of, let's just call it militant Pollyanna approach to marketing, especially when it comes to like influence and influencer marketing. I think it's ridiculous for brands to spend a lot of money to influencers, which are basically just, they're just pimping consumer whores, in my opinion, to just go out there. Like I've heard recently on Instagram, there's an Instagram channel called like something like your public lands hate you. And they're just calling out people that are like in that California poppy bloom. And they're just bypassing tape and signs and stuff, going where they're not supposed to be, trampling all over thing, you know, so they can get a picture of themselves in the flowers with a can of soup or something like that, because they've been paid to promote it. And I'm kind of like, why don't you stop funneling money to people who have built audiences or are just in it for the numbers? It's a quantity versus quality thing, and put that money into actually making your products better and making your actual customers influential themselves. So, you know, to see back in the Clout days that, you know, they were suggesting that I somehow subscribed or was supporting what they were doing that facilitated lazy, lazy product marketing, it just grinds my gears.
No, you know, I get you. I had a friend, and for whatever reason, she has like a lockdown Facebook profile, much like myself. And I think you've got a private profile. You only share it, you know, with people you're actually friends with.
Pretty much, yeah.
So she had like, back in the day, she had a Facebook profile that was locked down. But by some weird mechanism or crappy, you know, practices, Clout managed to pull her 12-year-old daughter and create a profile for her. Wow. Now, Facebook doesn't give you a profile. If you play by the rules anyway, it doesn't give you a profile until you're 13 and upward. But Clout had this 12-year-old girl with her pictures that her mum shared on her private network on her own profile. And for me, much like you said, mate, that was like shitty practices that just interrupted privacy and made you appear as a person that, you know, sort of supported what Clout was doing.
Right. Yeah. And that's, to me, I mean, I understand in you know, because I technically I work for a startup, and I know that the engineering teams are always working double time to make things happen and to, you know, continue development of the service while also circling the wagons and refining it and fixing bugs and issues over time. But sometimes you see stuff like that and it's just, come on, that there's like, where's the oversight? You know, you just in it. That's another thing that bugs me. You know, it's like, we've all, the last decade has just been a kick in the ass for most of us because of all the people who were speculating on real estate, you know, here in the United States, so to speak, you know, just the greed of just easily going after that big cash money wad. And we all got screwed over by it. And now housing prices are recovering and they're still going back up. And why is that happening? Well, because people are buying houses for cash so they can put them on Airbnb. And, you know, and with the startup culture, you know, every time I hear serial entrepreneur, like it just makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, because you don't hear serial entrepreneur in the context of, well, I built LinkedIn and then we went over and we built this new product, this new, like, you know, cloud-based blockchain constantly cranking out in pursuit of a cure for cancer type thing. What you hear is, well, we've developed this product that helps you better, it doubles conversion rates on emails sent to underwater basket weavers who like to get a Jamocha shake on Thursdays at Arby's. And it, you know, it doubles that conversion rate from 0.3 to 0.6%. And that's why we have like 8,000 different MarTech offerings out there. And they just build, they're not building companies. They're effectively building like hyped up features fully in the hopes that one of the big players will just come in and buy them. They can bail out. They don't have to think about 10, 15, 20 years down the road. There's no legacy. We're just speed to market, hype the shit out of it. Somebody write me a big fat check because we're one of a, you know, 100 quote unicorns out there these days. And it's just we're taking the humanity out of it. And at its core, I feel like marketing is the greatest superpower man's ever developed. You know, we think of all the tech and the psychology and the sociology and the science and the art that goes into marketing, and the whole purpose of connecting people to the idea of owning something. But, you know, so much of it is just, you're just trying to get people to do stuff that they're not interested in. And there's just, we're not putting that tech or any of that stuff really into listening to people and actually making better products that make a difference in people's lives that they want to buy it, you know? So
now I want to speak to you about that, because when and I guess this kind of goes back to the point we made about clout earlier. When social media first came out and really got popular, let's say 2008, around about that time. So Twitter was pretty much on its uprise. Facebook had been out for a couple of years. MySpace was king, that kind of stuff. And like you say, it was meant to be, or it was positioned as connecting everybody. So connecting peer-to-peer and connecting peer to brands, so consumer to brands, businesses, etc. Do you feel, you mentioned a really good point about the fact that tech companies, a lot of tech companies now, all they do is they come to market with one goal, and that's to be acquired, that's to be bought out, as opposed to actually making the users of the product's lives easier and, you know, more efficient. Do you think that social media has lost its way, and, you know, where we started as connection and one-to-one and all that good stuff? For me, I mean, one of the reasons I kind of closed a lot of my personal profiles down was I was just pissed off with all the negativity, hate, all that kind of stuff. So that took me away from a personal point of view. I still have to be on it as a marketer. Mm-hmm. So from your point of view, do you think that social has made it worse when it comes to, you know, like you say, making lives better? Or what's your point of view on that?
Oh, wow, Danny. You know,
or is that like a really big topic?
Well, no, it's just also, I'm thinking about this. I've been thinking about this for 2 hours this morning, like the way you say, like, we could keep talking for hours. And that's a great way to get me going for hours. I'm trying to, as a chatty person, trying to distill that down. I feel like it's a vicious circle in many regards. You know, the social networks came out and it all became, it was so exciting for us. Now all of a sudden, like, you could have these quick chats with people, you could be having multiple conversations with multiple people at the same time all around the world on Twitter. And I like to say, you know, as a marketer myself, I like to say, like, every new and great and wonderful thing that gets developed, every new medium goes to shit as soon as the advertisers show up, right? You know, it's like radio. Like, people went to satellite radio because they got tired of hearing about the next biggest car sales, you know, the sale at the car dealership. Mm-hmm. People went to HBO because they didn't like commercials on TV. Then we got TiVo. Then we got Netflix. And as soon as people start coming up and interrupting you with ads, you know, in the name of providing funding for these services that you enjoy, it makes people crazy. And I think as these technologies have come out and we've loved them and we've rapidly just flocked to them because of the desire for connection and you know, just the novel and the new and just human curiosity, I feel like we've flocked to them. But as a result of using them being the only things, like, it's really eroded our collective attention span. And so I think what's happened is, you know, the echo chamber is working on the market side, or supply side. You know, it works on that side too. So everybody's here. Everybody wants to see more. We want to see novel stuff. We're not really paying a whole lot of attention. We're not diving deep. So let's have more likes and clicks. And now, instead of just liking, you can love it or make a sad face or an angry face. And we can collect that sentiment so we can package that data. And, you know, it's that, I think, is driving it, because there's a frustration there. You know, there's, like, what somebody told me recently, that, you know, that negativity and all that anger and just evil that you see in social is basically just untapped creativity, people with creative ideas, and they want something more, and nobody's really paying any real attention to anything. So I don't know, does that kind of get at what you're looking
at. Yeah, it does. And I agree. It's I think that's why a lot of people are going more to dark social. So they're moving to, say, Facebook Messenger, you know, Twitter, DMs or whatever, or private communities on their website versus publicly posted on Facebook. I think Facebook's taken a huge hammering within the last 12 months, especially with the, you know, the Cambridge Analytica crap and that stuff. And they're just, the problem is Facebook has got, and kudos to Mark Zuckerberg, you know, kudos to how he built it, but Facebook's now your go-to. So you wake up in the morning, you might check email, you might check messages or whatever. But I think there was a poll that showed about 67% of people, the first thing they do is open their Facebook app in the morning and see if anybody's got a notification or whatever, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. Like, almost two-thirds of your life is based on Facebook. That's scary and crazy at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, before Facebook really took off, I'm a forum guy. And that was kind of part of my early anger in marketing and my interest in marketing. I don't even know how I found myself in those circles. And maybe somebody just shared an article somewhere once upon a time. But that was the thing. It's like, we had these forums, and I feel like you're right. Like, you and I have chatted about this. Like, there's something of a renaissance brewing, like the next wave that I feel like everybody's going to go into. And I'm like, if I believe in it really hard, it will happen. is people are starting to retract from that quantity over quality perspective. Facebook wanting to give people a quasi private walled garden kind of experience. Their track record suggests to me that while that does sound noble on the surface, it's basically a way to just get the last of people's guards down so they can really hoover up the last of the deep, dark psychological data that they need to, you know, install the final Manchurian candidate or something. But like, you're right. I feel like there's a renaissance coming on where people are like, I'm not going to try to like actively market what I'm doing. I'm going to stick with that critical mass. If I have, you know, like I used to run Gearbox Magazine, and I spent so much time trying to live up to the label of magazine and what that meant to be that I ended up being like, instead of meaning being everything to a small group of people, it was just, what the hell is Brian doing? He's been doing this for 10 years sort of thing. So I just pivoted. And the idea is like, I've got three people that really genuinely care about what I'm doing, and I'm going to make my entire content plan, my business plan. I'm going to do everything I can here to help those three people do what they want to do. That's what this is all about. And then, you know, if you deliver legitimate results and benefit to people, that's where you get legitimate word of mouth. And ain't no marketer out there has a problem with that kind of word of mouth marketing, you know?
No, and that's something I want to bring up with you, actually, because, and that was a good segue, actually, so well done, kudos. It's almost like I sent you, you know, show notes, which I did, so kudos to that. But I followed your Gearhead project for a while now, and I will admit, when I first heard of it, I was thinking, oh, it's just for guys that like cars, and as much as I like cars, I'm not someone that, you know, loves the certain trim on the Mitsubishi GTO versus the Porsche 911 or whatever.
Right.
But the Gearhead project's a bit different. And especially now, like you mentioned, you've got three guys working with you that you're trying to help move to another level in their own goals or career or whatever. And interestingly enough, going back to the Facebook conundrum where it's about, you know, public versus private, etc., you're a marketer, you mentioned that before, but with the Gearhead project, and I believe, and whether you want to talk about this or not, it's entirely up to you because it's early days, but you mentioned to me in an email that you've got a print magazine coming out soon, and it's about human-driven stories versus lead magnets for email list or product selling or whatever, which as a marketer is a different approach. Do you want to talk about that and why you decided to go that route?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I take that sort of militant Pollyanna, altruistic, you know, I'm too much of a digital hippie. Like, it's all got to be free, man. I struggle with that. So ultimately, yes, I am building a one-off magazine. I published my own, like, 90 to 100 plus page full cover 100% content, no ads magazines. Like, I published monthly magazines back in 2014, and it proved to be a real pain in the butt with a low return in terms of attention, interest, and let alone revenue. But I've always had the itch to keep going back to it. So finally, I was like, you know what? I've got these three people. I'm going to help them. Let's figure out what they need to do. And it just sort of spun out into, like I said, I'm thinking more towards my target audience is, or I should say my ideal customer profile, if you will, is the automotive enthusiast that's been around the block a few times, played with cars, knows things inside and out, and just get to that point where you're like, I've done everything. I want something more, but it doesn't mean a new project. So we decided to scratch my itch to publish. We're going to put together this special one-off magazine issue, and we're going to build it, and we're going to put it on Amazon so anybody can buy it and find it. And the core focus of this is I'm interviewing a variety of automotive friends who have gone on to do more than just play with cars. You know, they all come from the modified car scene or off-roading or racing. And so the idea is we're going to profile these folks in deep dive features on my podcast, then use those conversations as features in this magazine, which we're then going to supplement with additional context from the rest of our team and our networks. As far as like when he talked about how it was hard for him to set up an e-commerce platform because he had no idea what a payment gateway is, here's what a payment gateway is. Here's some options. Here's what you should probably think about when you're looking for one for yourself. So the idea being we build a lead magnet that shows others out there in the world that there are automotive enthusiasts who want more from life. And you don't have to just say like, oh, you like working on cars? Well, have you considered working at the dealership as a salesman or working in the market and in the garage working on cars? Like there's more to it than that. So to find that work-life parallel thing, what is it you like to do? So one of the guests or one of the features started his own B2C car parts business. Another is a web designer creative within the specific segment. Another is a couple of buddies that started an automotive podcast. They don't run ads. They're not monetizing it. They don't even know what the hell they're doing, but they've been doing it for 2 years. And it's awesome. There's a husband and wife couple that decided to change their lifestyle for the better part of a year. And I caught up with them last weekend while they're home for 3 months. Their vehicle is currently parked in a garage in Peru. And after they've put a little bit of money in their account, they're going to fly back to Peru and just keep exploring South America. So it's stories like that to give people the idea of if you like doing car stuff outside of work, you can find ways to better align your life to that. You can do something more. And so it becomes a lead magnet for this community we want to build where people that have that mindset can come together and help each other. Like I really envision a forum type space where you show up and say, I want to start a car detailing business. And instead of having, you know, three trolls pop up and say, well, that's stupid. You know, everybody pops up, says, that's awesome. How much homework have you done? Where are you with the idea? Do you need help setting up a website? Do you need help setting up a newsletter? Do you need a connection to a wholesaler for supplies? Where everybody genuinely comes together and helps people take that next step and just build that positive reinforcement engine. And ultimately, the goal is to build this entire media conglomerate platform that's all built around how can we all collectively monetize good works and goodwill that makes a positive impact in the lives of the people we know online. So,
wow, that sounds pretty cool. Because I know, and like you say, we've spoken about, you know, this before about private communities, etc. But that sounds like something that will really bring value to that community. And what I like about it is you're not just appealing to gearheads. It's appealing to people that maybe want to get into the industry and, I don't know, you know, for argument's sake, become a mechanic or, you know, be a reseller for their favorite brand or something. Is that something you've got planned where possibly you partner with, you know, local garages in certain areas? So you have like an area. So someone comes in and they're from Oklahoma and you've got an Oklahoma spot that says, hey, these are three garages that are looking for either help or selling their products or that kind of stuff. Is that one of your goals?
You know, I don't really have that as a formal goal, but I have gotten heading that direction with some of the content that I've been talking to some of my teammates about is, you know, like I have no problem with us sharing stories that help non-automotive enthusiasts, you know, because there's so much information out there. Like if you want to learn how to change your own oil, Like, seriously, if you've never turned a wrench, you can Google your like 1999 Nissan Altima SE how to oil change, and you can find a video that shows you how to change your oil. And right. You can do that. You can learn how to do anything on the internet these days. So the idea, though, is I feel like it's worth having content that goes out there that, you know, because if we're going to show people, like, hey, if you like playing with cars, you can do more than just play with cars. Like my tagline is, if you can modify your vehicle, you can modify your life. And so, like, if I'm going to suggest that this is something that when you reach this particular stage of automotive experience, you can do these other things with your life, then it stands to reason we should also have information out there that helps anyone else who says, you know, I kind of like cars, I'm interested in this, I'd like to get started. Get started. You know, build your audience. Build that, you know, it's so much of like ideal customer profile and persona marketing. Like, we're going after the C-level executives and the members of the buying committee. Right, yeah. And at the same time, it's like, why don't you go out there and empower regular people to become the right kind of customers? Because if you can educate the market, then the market that you, those people that you educate, they're going to appreciate, you know, the expertise that you bring to the table, and they're going to want to show up and, you know, be your customer when they're ready.
Now, one of the things that I do like about your model, and again, we've spoken about this many times over email, is, you know, like I said, you're not just attracting gearheads. You're looking for people that want to do something and do something meaningful.
Yeah.
And I know you've spoken about this before, and we've talked about living meaningfully. What's your take on living meaningfully, and how does that play into what you want to achieve with, you know, the Gearhead magazine, for example?
Wow. 42.
For anybody that doesn't know that, do you want to explain the 42 reference?
Sure. And it's twofold. Yeah. 42 is a really clever thing from that movie and or book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The supercomputer Deep Think was created to answer the question, what is the meaning of life, the universe, and everything? And after a million years of processing, came up with the answer, and it was 42. And the trivia, the clever thing about 42 that I learned is 42, I believe, is ASCII for the asterisk, which is commonly used in search queries to mean wildcard, whatever you want this symbol to be. So the secret is, the secret to life, the universe and everything is basically asterisk, wildcard, whatever you want it to be.
And also, now, I never knew that about 42. I knew the reference because that's one of my favorite book series. And I think that's the title of the third book is life. Yeah. The meaning, everything, et cetera. But I never knew that about asterisk. That's pretty cool. But sorry. Yeah. So your goal about living meaningfully with, you know, with the Gearhead magazine and that project.
So yeah, I mean, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but I just believe it's going to happen. And, you know, ultimately, for most of us in the world, like, we're born, we live, we do stuff, we die, and after a couple generations, nobody remembers us, you know, like, and that sounds so dark and scary. But at the same time, it's like, we have this time available to us, and it's really not worth worrying about, you know, big, huge aspirational goals that like society and pop culture puts on us. So I'm just kind of going to the point where I don't want to build something that is going to be, you know, acquired for, you know, nine figures or something like that. I just want to be able to spend more time with what I enjoy doing for fun. And that is talking to people about cars and playing with cars and going to car events. I just want to spend more of my time doing those things, because hanging out and spending time with those people means something to me. And if I can be a vehicle for providing tips and advice and connections that help those people live better, then, you know, maybe I don't end up with any kind of significant legacy. I don't end up in the history books, but I can feel like I lived a good life because I helped everyone that came into my life that was trying to be better. You know, everyone you meet is fighting a tough battle, so be kind, right? So, like, if I can be the person that everybody I meet that engages with me feels better off about their life and can actually have some confidence and reassurance that, no, it's okay to be weird and do that thing that you want to do. You don't have to separate what you do for a living and living itself. Then that's what I'm going for. And, you know, I'll never be rich doing it. Maybe I will. I mean, that's self-defeating, but that's kind of what I go for. It's just the meaning. It's like, if we're going to spend our time doing stuff, let's do stuff that matters. Let's, you know, it's like RTFM, the old internet thing for read the fucking manual. I like to say when I'm working on project and stuff, RTFM, results that fucking matter. Like, let's do something that matters. And
I like that.
You know, we're lucky as small individuals that we don't have to maintain these gigantic economies of scale. Like, I don't have 10,000 employees. I don't need revolving credit to make payroll every 2 weeks because my company's so big and my margins are so thin and I have to worry about moving, you know, 50 million widgets at a half a cent, you know, margin a piece so that I can make the shareholders happy. Like, I can make 100 people happy and make a difference in their lives. And if I can make a couple of grand a month doing that on the side, maybe I get to the point where I just need to get by on a couple of grand a month doing stuff that I believe in. So that's kind of the roadmap.
You know, and I like that. I like the fact that you say, you know, you talk about the economy of scale when, you know, we are one people businesses or we are one people whatever, and it's about making us happy and hopefully, like you say, making others happy and helping their lives moving forward. I completely get that, and I really buy into, you know, that mindset. And it's one of the things that I like about, I think you're subscribed as well, Paul Jarvis, his newsletter. Mm-hmm. I like what he talks about each week. It's not about being bigger. It's not about, you know, being huge or whatever. It's about being better at what you do that makes you a better person, but it also makes your customers better people because of what you give to them, right? Right. So I completely buy into that. So again, our time is up. I really, if I ran a 2 hour or 3 hour podcast like Joe Rogan and had like millions of subscribers, I could so much talk to you about this all day long. But unfortunately, I'm not Joe Rogan. I don't have millions of subscribers, so I kind of cut it off about here. I know people will benefit from knowing you, and I know people will benefit from knowing your project. So where can they find you online? Where's the best place for them to find you?
Wow. Well, I appreciate the kind words, Danny. I'm not on Twitter. And like we mentioned, my Facebook is kind of a private place, and I'm actually trying to work away from Facebook. If I can disappear from there forever, that would be great. Really much the best place to find me is thegearheadproject.com, and you can contact me through there if you want to chat. If you subscribe, I'm still one of those guys where if you get the newsletter, the email, you can reply to any of those, and they come right to me. I'm also on LinkedIn. And damn it, I should have, you know, I'm pretty sure it's /Brian Driggs, Brian with an I for all you Brians with a Y in the audience. What's up? And, Driggs is, Delta Romeo India Golf Sierra. That's me. And I'm totally down with meeting any friends of Danny. Any friend of Danny Brown's is a friend of mine.
Hey, be careful. I've got some weird friends. But I will make sure to drop these links into the show notes for sure. I really appreciate you coming on today. I know you've got to go to work. And I appreciate you having a beer with me before you go to work. That's like that's hardcore. That's dedication, mate. So
that's right.
Thank you for that.
Gotta hustle. Yeah.
So anywho, this has been another episode of Life Through Dram. I hope you've enjoyed it. Like I said, Brian is a person that I've, you know, connected with for a long time. So please check out his links in the show notes, follow the guy and learn, you know, if you're a gearhead especially, learn from him. If you're someone that wants to just improve your business from a small scale upwards, learn from him again. Until next week, you know, if you like the show, leave a review on iTunes or your preferred podcast. If you think someone will, you know, like it, recommend it. And until next week, Slanjivar.
This has been Life Through a Dram. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.